Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Today on Optusport Football Podcast, I'm joined by Spanish football expert Phil Kitramilides and senior football writer at ESPN, James Olley. And it's all about the weekend's derbies. Ange's first taste of the North London rivalry ends in a 2-2 draw, whilst Atletico take the bragging rights in Madrid. Also, are Chelsea in turmoil? And Phil begins his hashtag Always Watch Girona campaign. That's all coming up on this week's Optusport Football Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Optusport Football Podcast. So James Olley from ESPN joins us this week. And James, you were at the Emirates yesterday. What was that like?
Yeah, tremendous. Fantastic occasion. You know, it's easy, I think, in the past to be a bit critical about the atmosphere at the Emirates, but you have to give Arteta credit for the way he's brought them all together. And obviously that fixture brings out the most noise of that from that fan base, and a really entertaining game. You know, Spurs went toe to toe with them, gave as good as they got, and I think a draw was probably a fair result in the end.
Meanwhile, Phil Kitramilides, you were supposed to be at the Madrid derby. You had a ticket. What happened?
Hi, Mark. Yeah, I had a ticket. didn't realize we were going to talk about this. I had a ticket, and then I decided not to go because I was a little bit tired. It was quite late. Quite far away from my house. I mean, these are pathetic excuses. I felt a little bit ill and I decided to watch it on TV. Won't happen again, Mark. I'm really sorry. I've let everyone down, myself down, the Optusport Football Podcast down. So let's never speak of this again and move swiftly on, if that's okay.
No, sorry, Phil. Mate. There's going to be more than Madrid derby later on, but we're also certainly going to be talking about your no-show at a Madrid derby. I don't even know if listeners can actually fathom that. Anyway, let's start with Arsenal and against Spurs. North London derby, of course, highly anticipated. Obviously, action-packed 2-2 Arsenal against Spurs. James, you were there. What was it like? What was the atmosphere like and the expectation around that game?
Yeah, it was a great occasion. I think we probably know a lot about Arsenal at the moment. We know sort of where they are. They're obviously 3 years into the Mikel Arteta project, if you like, trusting the process, as they say. I think it was more a game about working out where Postecoglou is with Spurs and just whether they were ready to sort of commit to this more attacking kind of open style in what's obviously a very difficult place to go these days. And I thought Bissouma and Sarr in the centre of the park were really, really good for Spurs, particularly Bissouma. I thought he was absolutely outstanding in yesterday's game. And those two really gave them a platform for the attacking players to go and create. And you know, I think it says a lot about Spurs, who have habitually folded in that game, particularly in that fixture, in that stadium, that they came from a goal down twice. They showed good resilience. Yeah, they rode their luck at times, but you sort of have to in a game that's that open. But the fact that they stuck to this new, more attacking mantra, I think bodes really well for them, because sometimes these big games, I think we all know, can come sort of too early in the season. You think of, you know, when title challenges meet early in the campaign, it tends to be about, let's just not get beaten here, take a point and move on and see where we are, you know, March, April, May. This felt a little bit more like, actually, we both want to go and make a statement to the other here. And the fact that Spurs are able to do it, I think bodes really well, as I say, for a manager who's just started in a new job, started in a new league, had to cope with losing, you know, the talismanic centre forward in Harry Kane. And particularly Kane, when you think of, he's the all-time top goal scorer in North London derbies. This was the fixture they were probably going to miss him in more than any other. And actually, where the Son and Kane partnership has been so prolific, maybe we're looking at Son and Madison now combined for both the goals. Could maybe fill that void going forward.
James, you cover this as your patch, right? So you cover North London football a lot. You've seen a lot of North London derbies since the last time Spurs won at the Emirates in 2010. I'm assuming you've probably been to all the North London derbies possible. Yeah. Where does this Spurs performance rank? In terms of, you know, how impressive was it? Are we getting carried away by thinking this is one of the best Spurs performances we've seen in the last few years? given the opportunity, given the opposition as well, you know, how good this Arsenal team is. So how good was this Spurs performance?
I think it's right up there with the performances since their last one in 2010 for a number of reasons, not least because of how good Arsenal are these days. This is probably the best Arsenal team that there's been in that time. Yeah. I think there were some mitigating factors. I thought when Declan Rice went off, I think Arsenal got noticeably worse in the second half. I think that's a testament to Rice and the impact that he's made since he's come in from West Ham. The fact of the matter is that everything kind of went against Spurs. You know, they conceded an own goal that was quite unfortunate. I'm sure we can talk about the penalty. I seem to be in a minority thinking that was very, very harsh on Romero, given just the proximity of the shot to where he was in the box.
It's a clear penalty, but anyway, okay.
Yeah, but fine. I think if that's a clear penalty under the rules, then the rules need looking at, because I what else is he supposed to do there? I just don't really understand.
Jump with his arms by his side, but okay.
Right. Well, how and that's natural, is it? That's a natural thing to do.
If you don't want the ball to hit your hand, yeah.
When you take your kid to the park, when you jump around, do you teach him not to jump around with his hands in the air?
Well, I will. When I want to teach him not to give away penalties, yeah.
Well, I suppose there's no VR review at the park. but anyway, the point, you know, that was from...
We digress, yeah.
Certainly from Tottenham's point of view, that was a contentious penalty. And yet, these moments of adversity did not allow them to capitulate. And they have in the past. Look, there's a reason why this whole Spursy tag is in existence, and it is partly because they managed to snatch, you know, glorious failure from the jaws of victory and allow these things to kind of pile on top of each other and overwhelm them. So I think it bodes really well. Look, we're six games in, and to be fair, even Postecoglou himself is saying, look, it's not like I'm going to sit here and say, right, we're Champions League material, or yes, this is, you know, the blueprint for the future. I think, and I know we're going to come on to talk about Chelsea later on, but I think when you look at Pochettino, who obviously came in the summer as well, and how much of a mess it is at Chelsea compared with what Postecoglou inherited, which was not spending anywhere near as much money. Okay, overall, a more settled side, clearly, but you rip out Harry Kane from that team. I don't think many of us pre-season had Spurs be capable of producing a performance like this so early on in the campaign at the home of one of the main title challenges this season. And that is to Postecoglou's credit.
Well, here's what Ange had to say after yesterday's match. He was speaking to Betty Glover from Optus Sport.
You're looking for a reaction. And look, we're going to be that sort of side. I think you've seen it already in the games. That, you know, we're going to be relentless. Conceding a goal doesn't mean we go in our shell. If anything, we get back up and go again. And, you know, it was a great response because... Yeah, you look at both goals, an own goal, and then, you know, VAR penalty. So, you know, those kind of things that go against you on a day like this, it's very easy to feel sorry for yourself, but we never showed that.
Can I ask you about the penalty? Did you think it was fair?
I couldn't see it, but, you know, handballs, it's got me totally bemused these days. I just think every time it hits somebody's hand, I think it's going to be a penalty the way it's going. So it's one of those laws of the game that I think is confounding a lot of people.
And don't forget, you can watch the full interview on Optus Sport app. First of all, Phil, you interviewed Romero last week for Optus Sport. First game since then, he scored an own goal and gave away a penalty. Is there no chance of you ever interviewing him ever again?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it, does it? forget the Greek guy from the Australian TV. I'm never speaking to him again. But he was good. He was good. I mean, he's not like an overly effusive talker in terms of his tone of voice, but he's quite honest and he's quite measured and he gave quite long answers and he spoke a lot and he repeated the word family a lot about Postecoglou creating a family at Spurs. And I asked him in terms of Argentina and what they did at the World Cup being an example for them to follow, because Argentina had a talented squad but they had this unbelievable togetherness, and he said, yeah, it's definitely an example for us to follow. And he thinks that that is one of the key things that Postecoglou has to achieve first before they can then dream about winning or finishing top four. So he says, we're on the road to creating a family. That's very important. And then from there, we'll see what we can do. So it's one of the core essences of this Spurs project. And we saw that, didn't we? We saw that at the weekend, because you don't have that kind of reaction as a team unless you are a proper team, unless you are completely united, unless you've got each other's backs, unless you completely buy into what the manager is saying. And when you're in a very difficult situation, to say, no, we're not going to panic. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. And Maddison, when he was robbed right on the edge of the penalty area, and it should have been 2-0, and it wasn't, and they kept trying to play out. So it was just a tremendously encouraging performance from a Spurs perspective for all sorts of reasons. Footballing, obviously, but also the mentality they showed. I, as regular listeners will know, I'm a Spurs fan, and I've witnessed many, many, many capitulations over the years in this fixture. And I was fully, fully prepared to witness another one. And it didn't come. And in the end, Spurs were pretty comfortable and looked the more dangerous team in the second half, I thought.
I think what's come across is Postecoglou, by all accounts, stays out of the dressing room. He stays out of the changing room. He's made a point of letting this new leadership group, which includes Romero, has Maddison in it, has Son in it, let them form their own culture in the dressing room. I'm interested, Mark, obviously played the game. You know, I just wonder what you made of the fact that he has made a conscious effort to almost stay out of the dressing room and allow this new group to form their own bonds that I guess he hopes will manifest on the pitch in a positive way.
I think a lot of managers do stay out of the dressing room. But I think what was key there is that leadership group. So Ange coming in and identifying who he wants in the leadership group, basically putting that together and knowing a little bit of their personalities, watching the way they behave around the club, see if they're professional or not. But also the experience. And I think that's really key to have that leadership group, having the right people. If you've got the right people in that leadership group, then the rest takes care of itself, because everybody kind of falls into line. And it's by example most of the time. We had that at Fulham. Roy Hodgson, I don't think I ever saw him in the change room, ever. Like, it's certainly the training ground, but at matchday, of course, different. But in the training ground, I don't think I ever saw him once in our change room at all. And I had him for like 2 years. So he knew we had a group, a leadership group, that just got on with it. Led by example, pulled people into place if he needed to, had a quiet word. Nothing ever really, I mean, you had the odd little contentious moment, but in general, it was sorted out and it was all okay. Anyway, where do these two teams sit regarding the rest of the season? Are Arsenal going to be up there or thereabouts? Is Tottenham going to be the team that are going to be kind of the outlier that no one expected to be there? Phil?
I think the outlier that no one expected to be in the top four is probably Brighton at the moment. I think Spurs had their outside chances of mounting a push for the top four. not that I predicted that on our preview podcast. I predicted Chelsea in the top four. So we'll get onto that in a moment. I'm not too proud to admit that I may have got that a little bit wrong. But listen, Spurs without any European football, With a new man in charge and having lost their greatest player of all time, potentially, it was always going to be a transitionary season, but one with, I think, there were quiet hopes. Now, top four is going to be very difficult because it is so competitive and there are so many teams that will feel that they've got a chance of being in the top four. And we're saying top four could be top five as well this season, couldn't it? Next year, there could be five teams from the Premier League in the Champions League. So, you know, top five could be within Spurs' reach. They've had this game against Arsenal when they played well and they got a point from. They've got Liverpool at home next weekend. So I think we'll be closer to knowing where Spurs are in terms of top four after the next couple of weeks. They've got three London derbies, haven't they? They've got Fulham, Palace and Chelsea. So I think when if we talk in a month, we'll be a lot closer to knowing. After six games, it's a really good start. Really good start. Better than any of us would have thought of and a historically good start. But I think it's too early for us to say that they're going to be challengers for top four at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a shot at Champions League. And I don't think many of us thought they would in August. I think also there was probably a bit of a benefit of not having played in midweek. I think they finished the game strong. You know, I thought Arsenal looked really leggy at the end of the game. And you know, we've seen in the past that can have a major benefit in terms of trying to go for a top four, as Phil says, a top five spot. It will be on all likelihood this year. Sounds weird, doesn't it? Top five. It sounds like we're doing a rundown of the charts, not the Premier League table.
Spurs are out of the League Cup as well. They're out of the League Cup. No, League Cup to bother them. Yeah.
Tactical genius early move there from Postecoglou. Yeah. Now, I guess Phil's kind of covered off Spurs. So I'd say on Arsenal, I think it probably raises a few more questions about, you know, they are being judged as now as to whether they can win the league. And, you know, that is a very, very tall order against this Manchester City side who have got multiple injuries at the moment and yet are 6 from 6 and looking quite remorseless in the way they're going about it already. And so I think the question for Arsenal is, at the end of a week where they've had to deal with the Champions League for the first time in 6 years, they've picked up not loads of injuries, but they've got a few throughout the squad. Can they cope with those extra games, that increased demand? And is the squad deep enough to go on the kind of consistent run they're going to have to produce to overhaul Manchester City and win the league?
Chelsea in turmoil. I should actually say still in turmoil. James, what is going on at Chelsea? The money they've spent, Pochettino's supposed to be the saviour. What is going on?
Yeah, I mean, so I spent about 2 weeks in America in pre-season, and the first week I spent with Chelsea and the second with Arsenal. And the contrast between those two sides in terms of the mood around the place, Chelsea was chaos. And I thought at the time it said a lot. I mean, look, Arsenal are obviously a lot further ahead in where they want to be under Arteta. But it said a lot about just the magnitude of the job that Pochettino has got at Chelsea. I don't think we've ever seen anything like this in Premier League history, you know, in terms of the scale of turnover at all levels of the club. If you give long-term contracts to all of those squad members, so that most of them are on 6, 7, 8, 9 year deals in some cases, and you've put all these new executives in, you've put all this new backroom staff in, who's the one person you can change when it goes wrong?
Of course.
The manager. And as absurd as it is to be talking about Pochettino being under pressure, look at what happened to Graham Potter. And I don't want this to be the case because I like Pochettino and managers should be given time, just as we've already said, because of just the sheer scale of change at that club. He needs to be given more time than most. But I do worry that he might not get it, particularly when you juxtapose the problems they're having with someone like Postecoglou at Spurs, who's come in and in 6 games has got them playing in this quite expansive, completely different style to what's gone before.
And also, James, if you look at the games that Chelsea have had, and they've had this terrible, terrible start, having played, all right, they had Liverpool first game, but then West Ham, Luton, Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth and Aston Villa, that's a pretty gentle start to the season in theory for Chelsea.
And look at what they've got coming up. They've got, you know, in the next 9 games, I mean, they've got Brighton at home in the Carabao Cup in midweek. They could easily lose that. They've then got to go to Fulham, which is not easy these days. They've got to go to Burnley. Manchester United found that very hard. Then they've got Arsenal, Brentford, Tottenham, Man City, Newcastle, Brighton and Man United. That's the run that takes them into December. I mean, it is looking, it's not going to get any easier from here for Pochettino.
And also another aspect is that if we're talking about these high pressure situations already, we're talking about a squad that's very, very young and a team that he put out on the weekend against Aston Villa. I went through and I calculated the average age. The average age is just over 24 for that team. And that average age is brought up a lot by Thiago Silva starting, 39-year-old Thiago Silva. Without them, it's a really, really, really young team. And they're in a difficult situation to be relying on these young players. And he spoke about the young players afterwards, didn't he, Pochettino? And he said they needed to be a little bit more, have a bit more nous about them after Nicholas Jackson picked up his 5th yellow card of the season. Obviously, Malo Gusto got sent off for a challenge that he didn't really need to make. So he was calling out his youngsters a little bit, saying that they need to play with a bit more nous about them. And yes, it's not a good situation.
I think, James, what your point there about the fact that Ange Postecoglou started so well at Spurs has created that little bit more of pressure on Maurizio Pochettino. I agree with you. And if you compare the two, yes, you also said the fact that Spurs are a little bit more settled, didn't have many ins and outs, absolutely, but losing their best player by a long way, their proven goal scorer, is a massive loss. Whereas Pochettino and Chelsea, they just look like complete strangers. They do. They don't look like a team whatsoever. And I don't think there's been, I don't know, from the outside world, possibly, I would believe behind the scenes there's an improvement, I would think. just because of the way the environments that Mauricio Pochettino creates at clubs. But I don't think from the outside, it doesn't look like there's been a massive improvement on the football pitch anyway. And that's ultimately what counts, right? And this is the next question, though, Phil. Mauricio Pochettino was at PSG. He struggled there with the egos. Is that kind of an issue now? I mean, I know they haven't got the big, big superstars, but they've got, like James mentioned, they've got players that are on 7, 8, 9 year contracts they spent a fortune on that creates automatically big egos.
Yeah. I mean, what he does, like I said, he's got this young squad, and Pochettino, in theory, his best work is done with sort of young players and moulding a team with the youthful exuberance of these youngsters. What he hasn't had previously is maybe what no one's had previously, these unbelievably expensive young players who might have their egos elevated with their unbelievable transfer fees. So it's a really, really tough situation for Pochettino. And I want to ask James, how long do you think before, because you talk about him potentially being the one to be sacrificed. How long? This is ridiculous, isn't it? After
it
six
is
games.
Ridiculous. How, it
but
is
how, ridiculous. But it's ridiculous, but at the same time, it's potentially realistic to be asking this question. How much longer do you think Pochettino has got if they continue to not pick up points like this? We're laughing, but at the same time, it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
No, it's not. No, look, I mean, I brought it up, so I accept the premise of the question entirely. I can't see them doing anything before January. If they're in the bottom half come towards the end of January, they might think, well, we might want to get a new manager in. We might want to get a new manager who might want a player or two and see if we can salvage the situation. But I can't believe I'm sitting here and saying Pochettino's got 3 months. But it does feel that it could turn quite desperate quite quickly if the results continue this badly.
All right, quickly, James. Are they going to finish top four? And if they don't, whatever happens, will Pochettino still be the manager next season?
Two nice and easy ones there, Mark. Thanks. No, I don't think they will finish in the top four. I really can't see it. I hope that Pochettino will be given a second season. I would like to think, you'd like to think they're going to get better, right? The more they work under Pochettino, they're going to have clear weeks to work. You would think there would be an improvement in the weeks and the months ahead. As we've talked about with the fixture list, it's pretty unforgiving now, so they might have to wait a while. Mm. I would think if they can sneak a Europa League place, if he can get them to sort of 6th, 7th, maybe 8th, if it's the Conference League, I mean, that's better than nothing, I suppose. Then I would like to think that Pochettino will be, well, maybe not, but I'd like to think Pochettino will be given a second season. So I'm going to say they won't get in the top four, but he will muddle through and he will get the summer and the SAR next season.
Phil, I'm going to slightly change it for you. Are they going to finish in any European place? And will Pochettino be there next season?
Like I said on the preview podcast, I was pretty expectant of this Chelsea project. And 6 games in, I'm completely changing my tone. They're 9 points off a Champions League spot. 9 points. There is still many games to go, but that is a big, big gap. And there are many, many, many teams with the desires of European football. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to get European football. And that is quite a climb down from me saying they're going to get top four to I don't know if they're going to finish in the top 8 in 6 games. But that's the level of the mess at the moment in Chelsea. So I don't know, Mark, but I'm not particularly optimistic.
And the manager, will he still be there?
No.
There you go. Right, let's take a short break. And when we get back, we'll be talking all things La Liga.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, we have to talk about the Madrid derby. But first, before we even talk about the game, come on, Phil, you tried to explain why you didn't go to the game. Try and explain to somebody in Australia, somebody around the world who would love to go to a Madrid derby, had a ticket.
What?
But decided they didn't want to go.
Why are you making me feel bad about this? Why are you trying to guilt trip me here?
This is what we do, right? We get a little bit complacent, right? Because we find ourselves in a good position. We can watch all these games and go, well, I don't really fan. I've got a little bit of a cold.
Australia. I am sorry. I did not go to the Madrid derby yesterday. Nah, listen, I had a really busy weekend. It was my son's birthday on Saturday. And then we were out celebrating it on Sunday as well. I wasn't feeling particularly well either, and I just felt that it was a step too far, Mark, for me to go to the Madrid derby. I should have gone. Like I said, I've let everybody down, including my family and Optusport, and I'll try to never ever do it again.
Sounded older than you do now. Technically, you've never been older than you are now.
Correct. Yeah.
James, I want to know, would you turn it down, James? If you had a Madrid derby ticket, would you turn it down?
No, never. I'd miss my own birthday for it. I can't believe it. Phil's got his priorities completely wrong.
I apologize.
What did you make of the game? Did it live up to expectation?
Listen, it was good. Sometimes the Madrid derby, in terms of a spectacle, is actually quite cagey. It's not particularly thrilling, but I thought last night's game was really good. Atletico Madrid started well on the front foot. And I think this derby kind of exposed Real Madrid a little bit. And it's the first time that they've had a big game so far this season in terms of up against a big opponent. And they were really quite poor throughout the whole game. I thought there was a period after they scored in the first half, last 15 minutes of the first half, where they had the ball and they took it to Atletico Madrid. They had a goal ruled out for offside, which they weren't too happy about. And there was a chance that they might have got back into it there. But that was it, that 15-minute period. And otherwise, Atletico Madrid looked pretty comfortable. They defended really well and they took their chances. They've got a magnificent player in Antoine Griezmann, who I don't think gets talked enough about being one of the top players in the world, because he genuinely is. And I've never seen a superstar like him work so hard for the team. And the goal he scored 60 seconds before, he had been tracking back, covering in a left-back position because Samuel Lino had gone up the pitch, and then he's dropping back to cover the left-back, and then he makes the run up and scores. And that's just indicative of how hard he works for the team. And Atletico were worthy winners here, and Real Madrid have got problems because their squad looks short now. And this is the problem when you're asked for predictions at the start of the season. And I said Real Madrid, I'm pretty confident that they're going to win the league. And the business that Barcelona did at the end of the transfer window, bringing in the two Joaos in Felix and Cancelo, has just elevated their team to their starting 11 to really a next level. And Real Madrid, with the injuries to Courtois and Militao, their two most important defensive players, they're out for the rest of the season. Vinicius has missed a few games as well. And they look short. They look short of ideas up front, particularly. They're not scoring many goals. I think they're the fifth top scorers in La Liga. This was a game that I think exposed Real Madrid and brought them back down to earth with a bit of a bump after Jude Bellingham had sort of saved them in on quite a few occasions.
I have to say, I was tuning in to expecting to see another Bellingham masterclass, really. I mean, I also cover
England. You were tuning in to see a late Jude Bellingham winner. Yeah, that's what you're expecting, right?
Because that's what happens now, right? I mean, I also cover England. I've done for a long time, and I remember in Qatar at the World Cup when he made this sort of dynamic, almost game-changing run that was a bit Gascoigne-esque in terms of the way he sort of jinked past midfielders from deep and opened up the game. That's the sort of player I thought we might be getting for England. But really what we're seeing now, and Phil, obviously you'll know this better than me, is someone who's playing further forward, who's getting in the box and being able to finish chances. And it looks as though he could potentially add a new dimension to England's midfield. But for Real Madrid, he seems to be masking a multitude of problems in terms of their attacking creativity, because suddenly there's this platform for him to go and play. But if he's not the one who's able to deliver, they don't all of a sudden, it seems bizarre to say it about Real Madrid, they don't seem to have someone else who can come and step up.
Yeah, the thing is about yesterday, Carlo Ancelotti chose to not play with a central forward. So Joselu, the Spain international striker, started on the bench. Instead, Luka Modric came into the starting 11. And Bellingham played as a sort of second striker alongside Rodrigo, but neither of them being strikers, really. And Modric playing at the top of the diamond. And it didn't work at all. I think Bellingham works within that structure when you've got someone like Joselu to attract central defenders. And he can take advantage of the space that was not there last night.
And on the opposite side of the things, you've got Atletico Madrid, Alvaro Morata up front, your traditional kind of striker. he was on fire, wasn't he? I mean, his combination play, his movement. But let's be honest, I also don't think I want to be critical of Real Madrid defensively. Alaba and Rudiger, I thought, were all over the place. I mean, for a guy of Morata, who you know his strengths are, you know, balls into the box, high balls, he's great with his head. How can you leave him free on those occasions?
They were all over the place. I mean, and David Alaba's getting a lot of criticism this morning here for allowing Morata to score. I was actually just remembering, I was listening on the radio this morning, and it's the first time that I've heard dissenting voices against Jude Bellingham as well. People saying, you know, it's the first big game and Jude didn't turn up and it's all very good doing it against Getafe and Celta Vigo, but you need to do it against Atleti as well. So 6 games in and things turn pretty quickly.
He's 20 years old. And
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You're in Real Madrid and that's what happens. One week you're brilliant. The next week you're absolutely terrible, not good enough. Just quickly, I want to talk about Griezmann because I just see a parallel, right? So Griezmann was there, did well, left, went to Barcelona, in and out, came back again. They didn't seem to be the love. They'd fallen out, him and Diego Simeone. Now they're back in love again, right? And you talk about Griezmann's work rate. That's something I don't think you would associate with Antoine Griezmann in the past. As intense.
Maybe. I think he's always been someone who's been a team player, and that's why Simeone loves him so much and always wants him in his team, because he knows that he's going to get the total commitment from Antoine Griezmann. But perhaps Griezmann felt this time when he came back to Atletico Madrid and the fans were absolutely fuming at the way that he left, and there were all sorts of banners and whistles and nobody was happy about him coming back. He's won them back. He's won them back with his performances, and part of that performances has been the unbelievable work rate. So, yeah, maybe he felt like he had to do a little bit more to win them back, but he's done that. He's done that with a great difference. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, James, for joining us. I know you have to shoot off. Great to have you on the podcast, and great for your insight and certainly the North London Derby, which was very entertaining, as we all know.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Phil, let's talk about Barcelona. How good were they on the weekend? I mean, obviously up until about 76th minute, they were 2-0 down. But from that point onwards, they turned the game upside down, didn't they?
Yeah, it was an unbelievable comeback from Barcelona. They were 2-0 down at home to Celta Vigo. Then Robert Lewandowski scores in the 81st minute, the 85th minute, and Joao Cancelo scores in the 89th minute for that, you know, really quite remarkable comeback. It was a terrific game, this. If you were watching, lucky you, because you were massively entertained. I watched the game live and then I went back and watched the 12-minute highlights package. And there was so much that happened, so many chances. It could have been 9-5, 9-6 easily. Ter Stegen made saves. Barcelona had plenty of chances as well. João Félix is on it. He looking really creative, providing assists. João Cancelo scored the winning goal as well. And the two Joaos, their impact can't be underestimated, I don't think, or understated. Remember, this is the Barcelona side, Mark, that last season, they won 11 games 1-0. 1-0 to the Barcelona is not a scoreline that we're used to with the Catalans. And you know what? When Xavi was appointed, I don't know if it was in his presentation, press conference, or around that time, he actually said, this is Barcelona. It's not enough to win 1-0. And then his team went on and set the record for number of 1-0 wins in a season for Barcelona. And I think he realised that actually you still get 3 points for a 1-0 win. So he was quite pragmatic last season. But in the last few weeks, particularly with the arrivals of the Joaos, and they've scored 13 goals in the last 5 games with them in the team, there's been a different element to their attacking play. João Cancelo, he's a right back, but he's not just a right back. I mean, that's where he nominally starts. But when Barca are in possession, he's playing centre midfield a lot of the time. And he comes in and he helps them create a numerical advantage in the centre of the pitch. And he's a terrific player, world-class player, I feel. And him and João Félix have elevated this Barcelona starting 11, as I said earlier in the podcast, to something that is pretty, pretty special. And it's a Barca team that's been without Pedri, probably their best player for most of the season so far. So when he comes back into the team, they're going to be a really, really serious serious proposition, not just in Spain, because I think they have the best starting 11 in Spain now, but also they're starting to feel like they can do something in Europe. They haven't got out of the group stages in the Champions League for the last 2 seasons, which has been massive for them both emotionally and financially, so that they're going to get out of the group stages. I'm going to stick my neck out of the line, and then maybe they can do something in Europe. But in terms of La Liga, they're looking really, really good at the moment and playing the kind of football that you associate with Barcelona and that Xavi, as someone who is Barca through and through, wants his team to play.
So that's the difference, right? So the difference this season so far is that they're playing with a lot more entertaining sort of football, scoring lots of goals. I mean, I know they've considered a goal a game so far on average, so six goals so far. That's also partially, I'm not blaming Joao Cancelo, but kind of like you have a defender who's more an advanced player, more of an attacking player, you're going to leave yourself a little bit more exposed, right? So the benefit of going forward and having that creative player is going to be shorter numbers in the back and potentially conceding more goals, right?
Yeah, I mean, he knows that when he goes forward, he has to get back and defend. But that's the big question mark about Joao Cancelo, sort of defensively. Will he be able to provide the cover that is needed because he's getting forward so much? They've been without Ronald Araujo as well for most of this season, the big Uruguayan centre-back who might be the best centre-back in the world. And he's been out injured. So not having him has, I guess, contributed to them conceding goals. But they're playing some of their play in and around the box has just been really genuinely superb. And, you know, long may it continue. I'm not a Barca fan, but I am a fan of football. And when Barcelona are in full flight and scoring and creating, it is genuinely really quite exciting to see. One thing, Mark, I don't know when Robert Lewandowski is going to get a rest. He plays every game, every minute of every game. He's 35. They don't have anyone else really to fill in that position. So that's one question mark about the squad. And maybe they're just planning to play him every game until the January transfer window and then bring someone else in that he could have a rest then, because at the moment it doesn't look like he's resting at all.
Yeah, see, I think at his age, I think Robert Lewandowski will want to play every week. The question is whether he's physically able to, right? But he's fitter than he's ever been. That's what happens when you get older. You can see all the stuff he does. He looks an absolute machine. Did I mention that you said that Jean-Felix will never, ever go to Barcelona? It's just not going to happen, right? I mean, you did say that, right? Yeah, I did say that.
No,
right.
You know what? Not only did I say that, I think I put out a tweet, and it's on the 1st of September, I put out a tweet, and I said, I'm being told that João Félix to Barcelona is very, very close to being done. It's a deal that I do not understand at all. The manager doesn't seem very keen on him. I'm not sure where he plays. Barca have to pay loads of money for him. Do not understand it. No, no, no. So like I say, I'm big enough to admit when I've made a mistake. Seemingly, I have made something of a mistake here, Mark, in my judgment of the João Félix move. In my defence, I wasn't the only person saying that. There were quite a few journalists as well here. We didn't really understand the deal, but we're being made to look very silly at the moment.
Well, no, I have to agree with you. I'd put my hand up. I'd say the same thing. I didn't see how that's going to work. Wherever he's been, it's struggled. But I suppose the difference would be, I would think, one part of that quote that you said there was about Xavi doesn't want him or don't think he wants him, but he clearly does, right? He clearly likes him. He has his arm around him.
Yeah, he wasn't going to say, you know, don't come here, but I think his priority was João Cancelo. His priority was definitely João Cancelo. And then, all right, if Félix comes, cool, okay, we'll find somewhere to play him. I'm sure I can get something out of him. But I think João Cancelo was the priority. What is, I think, one of the key factors here is that it's almost last chance saloon for João Félix, this move, almost. And it feels ridiculous to be saying this about someone who's 23, but it feels like he knows it.
Well, that level, right? The big super club, right? I mean, we're saying that, you know, he's got a chance anywhere else, because I'm sure there'll be a million clubs that would want him. But yeah, at that elite level, I agree with you. And all I can say is he must have one hell of an agent to continuously get into those big clubs, even off the back of not performing well, right? So,
well, yeah, he has the agent. He has George Mendes.
So, absolutely, you know. And that's what it is, right? I mean, I think that's the key with that one. So Barcelona, in your liking right now, the way that they've performed, what you've seen so far, Madrid's deficiency, certainly scoring goals, are Barcelona slightly more, you more comfortable in saying Barcelona can go on and retain the title?
Yeah, and this is something that I touched upon in my column for Optusport this week. It's that you can't just take Barcelona and Real Madrid on their own in a vacuum. This is the in Spanish football, they coexist one against the other. So when you talk about one, you have to talk about the other. Barcelona have made these signings and Real Madrid have lost important players to injury and are not playing particularly well, and Barcelona are flying. So it's not just Barcelona are flying, it's that Real Madrid are looking dodgy as well, and they've lost these key players. So yeah, I don't think it's ridiculous to say that Barcelona are favourites at the moment. We're six games in, they're 1 point clear of Real Madrid at the top of the table, but the gap between these two sides feels a lot greater, and it feels like it's only going to get bigger as well. Good news for Real Madrid, by the way, there's a midweek game, they're at home to Las Palmas, they should win that. But after that, they're up against the surprise package of the season, Girona, away, and that could be a very, very tricky game.
What is going on, Girona? Second on the table, only second on goal difference after six games. I know it's only six games. They won their last game on the weekend, 5-3 against Mallorca. Wow, what's going on?
Yeah, I was trying to get the hashtag trending last season, always watch Girona. Hashtag always watch Girona, because they're a side that score loads of goals and conceded loads of goals as well, particularly last season. One of the best attacks and one of the worst defence. This season, they've actually tightened up their defence quite a lot. They conceded three at the weekend, but they were 5-1 up with 10 minutes to go and let in a couple of goals. So they're defending much better. And they've made some really interesting signings as well. They brought in a youngster called Savio, a young 19-year-old Brazilian, who I don't know if he's going to be there next season because he is playing so well. And Girona are part of the City group. I'm not saying he's going to move to Manchester City, but I think they will be aware of how good this youngster is and the potential that he has. They've got two Ukrainians in Tsigankov and Dovbik, who have come in and done exceptionally well. They've got a manager who is obsessed with playing football the right way and structures the team to recover the ball quickly. They're just a really well-coached, well-run unit from a small city. It's only 100,000 people in Girona. It's a small place. Traditionally, it was a basketball city as well. But their team are second in the table, as you said, just behind Barcelona on goal difference. They've got a game away to Villarreal in midweek because there's midweek fixtures. Get something out of that. And then they're home to Real Madrid. They beat Real Madrid last season. You might remember Tati Castellanos scored four goals against Real Madrid. I think it was a 4-2 win. So they'll feel confident and they're absolutely flying and they are one to watch. So I know Australians, it might be difficult. It might require setting an alarm at a horrible, horrible time. But always watch Girona. I'm telling you, you know, thank me later.
Well, so we're going to do hashtag always watch Girona.
Yeah.
Give Aussie supporters a reason as to why. Just really quickly, give them a spiel as to why they should watch Girona.
They are just extremely attractive side. They will just go out and try and score goals. And goals is what we want to see in football, right? So they're not sitting back. They're not trying to contain sides. Even against the bigger sides, they will try and take the game to them as well. They scored 5 at the weekend. They scored 4 the weekend before that. Really, really nice goals as well. So yeah, man, hashtag always watch Girona.
I'm going to be watching it as well, mate. I'm going to be hashtagging them as well because that absolutely sold to me. And we love to see lots and lots of goals. The other one I just want to give a quick brief mention to is Valencia. Still there, still doing all right. Bunch of kids doing well. You know, they're on the cusp. They're 6 on the table so far. I know it's only 6 games in, but well done to them so far. Well, that's all we've got time for today. I want to thank you again, Phil, for joining me this week.
Thank you, mate. Yep. See you next week.
Certainly will. A reminder that every game of the Premier League and La Liga is live on Optus Sport. And the FA Women's Super League returns this weekend with no fewer than 13 Australians playing in the league. Thanks for your company on the Optus Sport Football Podcast. See you next time.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.